Hey guys, welcome back to Storytime with Rob. I am Rob, and we gotta pick back up kind of where we left off. So if you haven't listened to the last episode, you can go back and retrace and listen to it, and that'll put you right back on time here. I had to take a little bit of time off from doing these because I had to get a... Well, I didn't have to, but I got a new computer. I think I kind of got the wrinkles ironed out here on this new thing, and so, yeah, let's get back at it. So, here we go. The good news. Science seems to be a useful tool in all of this. The bad news? It's raising more questions than it's answering. I know a lot of you have referenced the mold stories which deal with the demonic possession, but after what's happened today, I think we're dealing with something very different. Christopher called me when he landed, and I rushed to the airport. By the time I got there, he had already cleared customs and was waiting for me. He had his bag, and I've never been happier or more confused to see that beat-up suitcase of his, which I've tried countless times to replace. When I saw him, I knew it was him. No fat lip, no odor, no unexplained weight gain. I ran to him and threw my arms around him. God, I missed him. I was still weary, but the part of me that promised to love and to honor was overpowering the part of me that was absolutely terrified about what happened last night. I rushed him to the car and threw his suitcase in the trunk. It didn't stink, and it didn't have any residue on it, and I just wanted to get back on the road and explain to him what was happening. As we rushed down the highway, he asked me what was wrong, what could have possibly upset me to the point where I was acting like a total bag of nerves. I explained everything from the smell to the other Christopher, to my posting on Reddit, to giving the samples at the lab. He was completely silent. Didn't say a word the entire time. Then he turned to me and asked if I'd taken acid or if I had smoked meth. I had some substance abuse problems when I was younger, and Chris met me at the tail end of it. I could see that he didn't believe a word that I was saying. I begged and pleaded with him to believe me, but he just remained silent and stared dead ahead. I could see that he was getting angrier by the moment, thinking that I was making up the entire thing. God damn it, Peter, I'm tired, I'm jet-lagged, and I've been stuck in an airport for almost a day. I don't need this shit as soon as I get back. Can we just go home, I'll take a shower, we'll go to bed, and everything will be okay? Absolutely not. No way in hell I was going back to the house, or should I? I started questioning my own sanity. Maybe I did make the whole thing up. Nothing about the situation made sense, and I hadn't experienced any side effects from the exposure to whatever was on the suitcase handle. The suitcase. I moved the suitcase into the garage. I had forgotten about it being shattered by the way that Christopher was reacting to the situation. If we went to the house, I could show him the suitcase, and then he would believe me. I calmly turned to him. Okay, remember I told you about the suitcase? If we go back home and your suitcase is there, will you believe me? I think it was mostly just lack of sleep and exhaustion, coupled with a desire to just get home, that made him agree that if the suitcase was there, he would believe me. I gunned it down the highway. 145 kilometers at one point, I just didn't care. I just wanted to show him and get the hell out of there. I pulled into the drive and hit the garage door button on my visor, knowing, feeling 100% convinced that I was about to be vindicated. The garage door opened up, and nothing. Absolutely nothing. The suitcase wasn't there. I ran out of the car and tore the garage apart. Maybe it had rolled somewhere. Maybe I'd forgotten where I'd put it. I searched a good 5 minutes and just turned blank face to him. Christopher was pissed. I hadn't seen him this angry in a while. Peter, this isn't funny anymore. I'm tired, I'm hungry, I just want to go to sleep. Get in the house and just drop it. I love you. I'm gonna take your word for it that you're clean, but don't press me. I just stood there staring at him as he walked into the house. I didn't know what to do. Chris immediately made for the shower. We didn't even take his real suitcase out of the car. We just went into the house, and I sat in the living room. Nothing felt weird or out of place, and the only smell was the faint vanilla scent from the air wick in the wall. And it was about 7 p.m. by this point. Chris got out of the shower and came downstairs wearing his towel. Hearing his footsteps down the stairs terrified me. I froze on the couch and was just relieved to see that he had his normal physique. "Are you coming to bed?" he asked, and his tone was much nicer and much more sweet than before. It's amazing how much a good shower can do for a man. I saw this as my opportunity to convince him to leave the house. I pleaded with him one more time, and I could just see a look of resigned exhaustion on his face. "Okay, babe, we'll go to a hotel. It'll clear your mind and maybe you'll stop being such a drama queen." "I love you," was the only thing that I blurted out before I broke down crying. I think the relief of finally convincing him to leave was vindication of the insanity that I was descending into. He pulled on some clothes, and I packed a bag. He didn't need anything because he had clean clothes in his suitcase that was still in the trunk of the car. We got into the car, and he gave me a kiss. "Man, you're high maintenance sometimes. One bad dream and you lose your shit. You're a logical person. I've never met a more staunch atheist, and you're acting like a goddamn ghost slept with you. Let's go to the King Edward." It was my favorite hotel in the city, but because it was only 10 minutes away, we went there for parties and lunch and rarely got the chance to spend the night. The rooms are amazing. As we drove, I started to calm down. Having Christopher back and being away from the house made me feel much better. The phone. In the panic to get home and tell him everything, I forgot to show him the weird text that I had received. I quickly took out my cell and scrolled through the texts. Nothing. No text from him. Nothing. I didn't want to tell him anything because he would just continue to think that I was losing it, and I didn't want to look like a bigger fool than I already had been. I know I had sent and received those texts from him. I know I did. But, frankly, I just wanted to get to the hotel and unwind. Maybe I could make sense of this tomorrow. The King Edward has a beautiful foyer dominated by an enormous oil portrait of King Edward VII. As we made our way towards the check-in desk, the clerk smiled at us and said, "Mr. Tillman, how was your evening? And I presume this is Dr. Tillman?" He was looking at me. Christopher and I just stood there in silence. How did she know our names? We made no reservations, and we surely didn't come there enough for her to know us by name. Fine. I'm sorry. Have we met?" Christopher looked at her quizzically and then turned to me. "Of course, sir. You just stepped out and told me that you were going to get your husband." Her smile had turned to a look of confusion. Christopher just stared at me. He nor I knew what to say. "I'm sorry, gentlemen. Is everything okay?" The poor woman had no idea what was going on, and frankly, neither did I. Chris just stood there. I could see his face change. I could see that he was starting to believe me. I could see that his opinion of my night was changing. I spoke first. Yes, we're fine, but we lost our room key. Can you please give us another one? He's so clumsy sometimes." I knew this was my chance to get to the bottom of this, and frankly, we were in a hotel known for VIP guests and great security, so there was no way we were going to be attacked. I felt safe, but I asked if the attendant would come with us up to the room. "Of course, sir, not a problem. Would you be able to provide some photo ID just to verify your identity?" "I do recognize you. However, I just have to ask. It's hotel policy." "Of course," I said and turned to Christopher. He was just staring straight ahead, still not understanding fully what was going on. I grabbed his hand. It was cold and clammy. "Honey, I need your driver's license." "Oh, sure. Okay, here you go." He awkwardly fished his wallet out of his back pocket and took out his license. After a couple minutes, a new key was generated and the lady handed Christopher his license. he still hadn't said a word and just kept his grip on the handle of his suitcase. I know he was trying not to panic and just go with it, but the full impact of my panic had been dumped onto his jet-lagged mind, and I could see he wasn't handling it well. The three of us got into the elevator, and the check-in clerk hit the 9th floor button. Everything seemed normal, and the beauty and cleanliness of the hotel made nothing seem out of place. Christopher just kept staring at me. His eyes betrayed his worry, but I made the just-go-with-it face. We left the elevator and approached a room in the middle of the hallway. The clerk put the keycard in, and the light on the lock turned to fluorescent green. She opened the door and almost fell backwards. The smell was unbearable. It stank, it reeked, it pulsated with the stench of rotten meat. Both Christopher and I made retching noises and backed into the hallway. "Oh my God, what is that?" The clerk looked at Christopher with a sense of horror, looking like she wanted to hit him for what she presumed he had done in, or to, the room. With hand over her mouth, she yelled in a muffled tone, "Sir, what is that smell?" I knew the smell. I knew it all too well. I just stood there, taking it all in, feeling the full burning feeling at the back of my throat. "I have no idea. That's definitely not for me," Christopher shot back at her. He was a good 10 feet behind me at this point, the smell being too unbearable for him. The clerk entered the room and looked around. I followed right behind her. It was spotless. The bed hadn't been touched, the towels were still folded neatly, and the mini bar had been undisturbed. The smell began to waft into the hall, and the attendant ushered me out, left the room, and closed the door. Chris and the attendant just stood there gasping, trying to regain their breath, and I remained shocked still, remembering the night before. We made our way back into the lobby. The hotel clerk looked pissed as hell, Chris standing there in a mixture of nausea and shock, and myself just terrified that I would run into whoever the other Christopher was. I knew I was right, and from the look on Christopher's face, he believed me. The elevator opened, and I looked at the attendant. "We're sorry for the smell, sir. I realize there's nothing you could have done to cause it. It's probably the toilet backed up or something. We'll find you another room. The hotel isn't too busy tonight." "Okay," I replied. "Thank you. We'll go for a walk. We just need to clear our minds." I held Christopher's hand for dear life and guided him into the lobby seating area. "I'm so sorry, babe. I love you so much. I'm sorry I didn't believe you." He was just so apologetic. "I need a drink," he continued. "But fucking hell, I need to change my clothes. That smell is just burned into them." I sat in the lobby while Christopher made his way to the men's room, suitcase in tow. I had line of sight of the room and felt safe surrounded by the hotel staff and various other attendants. Less than 2 minutes passed and Christopher came running out of the bathroom, white as a sheet. "We need to go. We need to go now." He dragged me by the hand into the street. "Babe, calm down. What's wrong?" I asked as he dragged me towards our car. "There was two of everything. Two toothbrushes, two shirts, two sets of pants, two of everything. He continued to drag me towards the car. I just went with it. It had been one hell of a night, and I wasn't going to object it to anything. We sat in the car, Christopher panting. "What do you mean there was two of everything?" I asked. "I opened my suitcase, and all of my clothes, my shoes, my everything, there was two of them." It was only then that I realized what he was talking about, and that he had left his suitcase in the men's room. "Someone's been in the suitcase and replicated every fucking thing I own. I don't know what's going on, but this shit isn't right. We're going to Anthony's." He hit the gas hard. I felt myself press into the seat as the car accelerated out of the parking lot and merged onto the highway. Anthony lived about 20 minutes away, regular driving. "We're going to make it in 10. Anthony was a physician, a neurologist, and really, knowing that we were not going home and would have medical care if needed, just made me feel better. Christopher looked like he was going to cry, mixed with the anger of a man who had been wronged. His privacy had been invaded. Someone was pretending to be him, and he had no idea what was going on. I put my hands on his thigh, squeeze, trying to reassure him. In the 8 years that I had known him, I had never seen him like this. I called Anthony. Anthony, it's Peter. We're coming over. Christopher and I need to spend the night. I'll explain everything when I get there.
Okay. Are you all right? Do either of you need anything?
No, just make sure there's parking in the driveway.
Sure thing. See you soon. Tell Chris thanks again for the gift.
I assumed Christopher had sent Anthony a gift from Vienna. He usually sent things back for him whenever he traveled. He's been the big brother that Anthony needed many times throughout his life. We pulled into the drive. Christopher bolted out of the car and banged on Anthony's door. Anthony opened the door and Christopher burst in. Get in, Peter, and lock the door. Anthony, put on the alarm system. Anthony complied and asked what the hell was going on. Christopher started. We've had a crazy fucking night, Tony. We need to stay here. Something really strange is going on, and I don't feel safe.
Why? What could have happened in the past hour to make you this way?
The past hour?
Yeah, you looked a little out of it when you dropped the bag off, but I figured it was the jet lag. At least the lip looks a little less swollen. Good to see that the Benadryl I gave you is working. And damn, glad to see you showered because you stank. Mind you, no one smells good after a whole day of travel.
Christopher nearly fainted. He fell back into the chair that was behind him. Anthony, did you let Christopher in when he came here an hour ago?
Of course. He gave me the gift bag and I told him to come in so I could take a look at his lip. He said he was just having a reaction to some pineapple in the salad from the plane.
A pineapple allergy runs in Christopher's family and Anthony is aware of this.
So I just gave him some Benadryl and told him to drink lots of water.
Did he look different otherwise? Was he fatter?
What? What do you mean? Did he look any fatter than he is now? No.
What was he driving?
Your BMW. Your car.
You mean that car that we have parked in your driveway right now?
Yes, he said he was going to get you and then go to dinner at King Edward. Christopher Joseph Tillman, what the hell is going on? You two are freaking me out.
Anthony, I picked up Christopher from the airport. I've been with him and with our car all afternoon. That thing that came to the house wasn't Christopher. Anthony looked at us skeptically, but his medical mind made him realize that there was no way Christopher's lip would look so normal within an hour. I started to tell him the story, all the while keeping an eye on Christopher, who had gone from a pale white to a strange greenish hue. I could only imagine what was going on in his mind. Just then, my phone rang. It was Vass, short for Vasily, the chemist that did my palm scraping from earlier on in the day. Hey, Vass, what's up? It's about 8:30 p.m. at this point.
Are you on campus tomorrow? I need to see you. We have some results back and they're unusual. Nothing that could hurt you, so don't panic about that, but just not normal.
Vass, tell me what's going on. What did you find? I can't handle any more suspense after today. Vass was very, very gruff. A very bearish Russian man, whom I had known quite a few years. I had never heard him sound confused or worried. Tonight his voice shook with both of those emotions. It almost sounded like he was under duress.
Peter, you're my friend. I don't want to jump to conclusions, but the residue from under your fingernails was human tissue. It was necrotizing, rotting, human tissue. What's your blood type?
O negative.
This is AB positive. I think you need to answer some questions for me, Peter.
What? Okay, I'll come into the lab in the morning. Thanks, Vass.
No problem. It's a good thing you don't have that suitcase anymore. Good night.
As I hung up the phone, I realized I'd never told Vass that I no longer had the suitcase. I turned to Christopher. He had the gift bag that he had given to Anthony an hour earlier in his hand. It was filled with cheesy Austrian souvenirs and nothing really of note, except for a card and an envelope. Chris opened the envelope and scanned the card. What the fuck? Chris yelled and handed me the card. It wasn't handwritten. It was typed. 608, Arrive at airport. 6:44. They get home. 7:33. Hotel. 7:41. Go to room. 7:58. Leave quick. Go to car. 8:15. Anthony. 8:33. Phone ring. Chemist. 11:45. Me. It's 10:45 as I type this on my iPad. Anthony, myself, and Chris are sitting at a Tim Hortons across the road from 52 Division, a police precinct, waiting. p.m., Tuesday, July 28th, 2014. Christopher, Anthony, and myself were all crammed into a booth inside the coffee shop. Confusion, anger, fear, hatred, every single visceral emotion that pulsates in a situation of unknowing flew between the three of us. Virtually no words were exchanged. I think we all sat there, contemplating our own mortality. If this person knew our every move and exactly where we were going to be, how could we do anything about it? What force did we have to fight it? I held tightly onto Christopher's hand. His normally warm, loving hands were cold and clammy with fear. We were across the road from the police station, but how would we explain ourselves? We had brought the note, but what would the introduction be? Oh, hello, officer. My husband and all of his possessions, including a full-size sedan, were replicated and used to terrify his cousin, a high-ranking neurologist specializing in pediatrics at Sick Kids Hospital. I couldn't imagine their reaction. I could only imagine what we were going to be either laughed at or jeopardize Anthony's career if we said anything. The brain doctor is seeing shit and thinks that his cousin is a doppelganger that I may or may not have slept next to while my real husband was in Vienna. No, seriously, believe us. Oh, I teach physics too. Fuck, this truly was a catch-22. No way to help ourselves. I couldn't even begin to think of how we would start. Anthony isn't one for silences. He's a very talkative man, and I could feel the tension was getting to him. Saw open a cranium. Play around in there. Stitch it back up. Sure, no problem. Waiting for a seemingly paranormal creature in a coffee shop in the middle of the largest Canadian metropolis? Hell no.
I'm going to order. Do you guys want anything?
Anthony asked as he rose from the table. Sit the hell down. You aren't going anywhere. Christopher was starting to get angry. He was a lawyer, and his legally trained bulldog mind was beginning to get the better of him. I could see that he was beginning to reach his limit with what was going on.
Chris, you can see me. The counter is, what, 2 feet away? We can't just sit here. We have to order. Plus, I'm parched. It's about 30 degrees out there. You two just keep looking at me, and I'll keep looking at you. Cool?
I'll take an ice cap, Chris requested. I'll just have a coffee, I weakly said. I realized that neither Chris nor I had eaten since this started, and we both had to force ourselves to eat something. And a bagel toasted with butter. Anthony made his way to the counter, about 4 steps away, and just to keep everyone's minds at peace and focus on the task at hand, we continued the conversation. Christopher. So we all agree that he knows we're here, right? Absolutely. He knew we were here before we knew we were coming here.
We're in public. The cops are across the road. This is the best place to be. If he's going to try anything, all of these people would notice and say something. The place is well lit, and once again, cops across the road.
He was right. There was little chance of one of us would be stabbed or murdered in the middle of a restaurant, but all of us were convinced that Chris would show up, especially after the experience at the King Edward Hotel. He came there, he waited, and then he left. He was going to get his husband, me, according to the check-in clerk. Chris looked around Anthony, vigilant as ever. My man. You know, he's right. This place is pretty busy, especially for a Wednesday night. I took my eyes off Anthony as well, looked behind us, even though the door was in the opposite direction, and I swore I wouldn't take my eyes off of it. They were both right. There were a lot of kids and what looked like inconsiderate, neglectful women tending to them all. About 4 kids, 1 parent, typical for that part of town. It was a rich city, but like everywhere, there was poverty. Anthony reached the counter and placed the order. The attendant, unusually happy for 11 p.m., filled the order, and as she passed the tray to Anthony, looked at him and said, "Don't forget to roll up the rim to win."
"Thanks,"
said Anthony, and made the 4 steps back to our booth. Sidebar, for those of you who aren't Canadian, roll up the rim to win is pretty much a national event. The loyalty Americans pay to Starbucks is reciprocated in Canada with our loyalty to Tim Hortons. It's a national institution. Twice a year, they hold a contest where you literally roll up the rim of your coffee cup to see if you won a prize. Quite like checking under a pop bottle cap to see if you won a prize. We sat there and drank our drinks in virtual silence, just watching the clock. About 10 minutes had passed, so it was 11 p.m. And I couldn't handle the noise of the damn kids anymore. I looked at Anthony and Chris. "I need a cigarette. Can we go outside?" "We'll stay by the door, and if anything, it's straight shot across the parking lot to the cop station. We can make it." They looked at each other and agreed. The noise from the kids was getting too much, and they could have used a break instead of just sitting there waiting for a visitor to arrive. We all stood up, almost in a choreographed manner, no one wanting to be left behind in the cafe. And we made our way to the door. We stood right by the entrance. With our car parked in front of us, it had cooled down a fair amount, and there was definitely a bit of nip in the air. Hell, this is Canada. Nothing surprising there. Christopher opened the car. "I'm going to grab my sweater from the back seat." He hit the auto opener on his keys, and the locks flew open. I approached the vehicle, clearly looking inside to see if anyone was crouched in the back seat, just waiting for me. Nothing. I opened the door, constantly looking back at Anthony and Christopher, who were less than a foot away from me at this point, grabbed the sweater, and we all walked back to the entrance. I had finished the cigarette in record time and just wanted to get back into the restaurant. Even though we could run to the police station if need be, the silence of the parking lot, coupled with the exposure of being outside, just gave me an eerie feeling. Anthony and Christopher agreed with me, and we all went back inside. 11:30 p.m. Damn, the kids were annoying. Christopher and I were just in the initial phases of adoption and loved children dearly, but these kids wouldn't shut up. Coupled with the tension of what we were waiting for, it started to get too much. Christopher squeezed my hand. "I'm just gonna tell them to shut up. Fuck, I can't handle this."
"Calm down. Focus on the task at hand. Let that be white noise."
Anthony, our ever-patient physician, had a very calming effect on Christopher, and this seemed to work. Every second that passed, every minute that dragged by, we could feel the tension building. Would he come through the door? Would he manifest right in front of us? How would he do it? And the ultimate question, what the hell did Chris want with us? What was he trying to extract from us that we could possibly give him? Was it money? Say so, and I'll write a check for you right there. Was it control? Was it power? Was it sexual favors? If it was that, I'd volunteer to do them right then and there if it meant that we'd be left alone. Not one of us said a word for the next 15 minutes. We sat there in utter silence, the overpowering din of the coffee shop providing what turned out to be rather useful background noise. In hindsight, if the Tim Hortons had been dead silent, we would have had a much harder time being there. 11:45. We all looked at one another. Nothing. Nothing changed. Nothing happened. The din and the noise still continued. People just kept placing orders. The overly happy employee kept filling the orders, and just nothing. Christopher kept playing with the car keys, but still nothing. Anthony finished his coffee and rolled up the rim. He froze. Where it should have said, "Please try again," or "You want a donut," it just said, "1 and 1 is 2. Why three? Anthony just said, "Oh shit," and showed us the rim. The creature knew we were here. He knew how to communicate with us, but he wasn't here. What the hell was he trying to say? Christopher, Anthony, and I looked at one another. Maybe he wasn't going to show up in such a crowded place and chose to send us a message this way. Maybe we had outsmarted him by picking such a public place. We had screwed up his timeline. Here we were waiting.
"Hey, mister, what happened to your lip?"
Those seven words were like a gong, like the so-called shot heard around the world. Fuck, they were a cannon in that noisy room to us. Chris and I turned around, and Anthony, already facing that direction, looked over our shoulders. There was a man sitting in the booth behind ours, his back to us. He was wearing a hat and a jacket with a collar popped. There, standing. Looking at him was a girl, no more than 6 years old, staring at his face.
"Mister, why is your lip so fat? That's gross."
I have never moved that fast in my life.
"Jesus fucking Christ, run!"
was the only thing that Anthony could think to say. Christopher and I shot up out of the coffee shop as quickly as we could. Christopher hit the clicker for the car door, and the safety of the beep-beep that automatic locks make when they open sounded. We all piled into the car. Christopher in the driver's seat, me in the passenger, and Anthony in the back. We hit the start button, and the engine came alive with a soft purr. Chris threw the car into reverse, and we gunned it out of the parking lot straight into the parking lot of the cop station. All three of us were yelling. Nothing was discernible. Christopher was yelling about how the hell did we miss him coming into the cafe. That seat was definitely empty when we sat down. Anthony was almost on the verge of hyperventilating and kept asking what the fuck we think he wanted. And I just sat there, practically screaming gibberish. We'd come to an abrupt stop in the front door of the police station, frozen inside the cars. Yes, we know, we should have run inside, but none of us could move. It still boggles my mind that Christopher was able to get the damn car across the road without hitting anyone. Dundas Street is incredibly busy, but still, none of us could move. We just sat there. Anthony broke the silence.
"Stay in the car. Don't go inside. We never saw his face. We don't know what we're going in there to report. We can't just walk in and say, 'A man with a fat lip caused the girl to be grossed out, so we ran out of there.' What the fuck do you think the cops are gonna think? They're gonna think that we're fucking drugged out of our minds."
"Are you fucking kidding me? The hell with this shit. I'm going inside. I'm done. I can't." "Stop. He's right. We don't know if that's him. Maybe it was some druggie with fucked up meth teeth. We don't know anything yet. Sure, it happened in 11:45, but what the fuck does that mean?"
"We gotta think this through. Turn off the lights and wait to see if he leaves."
We all sat there, realizing that regardless of how scared we were, regardless of what had happened, we had nothing to tell the cops. We had nothing. We couldn't tell them about Chris coming home because that story would break down due to total lack of evidence. No texts were on my phone, nothing. We couldn't tell them about Chris dropping the bag off at Anthony's because the second they asked what he looked like and what he drove, Dr. Anthony Dovid would have to say, "Oh, he looked like the guy standing next to me, and he drove the car that I came here in." We had nothing. We sat there in the car with nothing left to do but to wait. 11:47 p.m. We sat there, all of us in shock and pure fear. The cops were less than a stone's throw away from us, and we knew that if we saw anything, we'd book it from the car and just go grab a police officer. Until then, we had nothing to go on. We just stared at the only entrance to the Tim Hortons we could see, the one we had gone in and out of several times, the one that led to the parking lot where I got that cigarette. "I'm burning up. I need to cool down. This is getting to me," Christopher said. I could only imagine how frayed my poor husband's nerves were at this point, so I reached over and put on the AC. There was no fucking way I would be doing down a window. We had never seen that thing arrive or leave the coffee shop. Who knew what he was capable of? The AC turned on, and once again the hum of the fan filled the car with a much-needed noise. And all we did was stare. Stare at that damn door.
"If you're putting on the AC, I'm going to put on this sweater. Peter, is this yours?"
Anthony asked from the back seat. "Yeah, go ahead. It's... Wait. Anthony, what color is the fucking sweater?
It's blue with a hood.
Get the fuck out of the car now. Go, go, go. I had taken my blue sweater out of my car when I went for a cigarette while we were waiting. I was wearing my blue sweater. That was the creature's replication of my blue sweater. We were inside the fucking creature's car. We couldn't tell the difference because there was no difference. This was the car that had been driven to Anthony's house when Chris delivered the gift bag. The three of us frantically tried to open the doors, but they wouldn't budge. It was like they were welded shut. Christopher reached into the middle console and pulled out the emergency, "If you're in a fire in your car, use this to break the windshield" hammer I made him buy, and pounded away at the glass. Nothing. Not even a scratch. We were trapped inside the creature's car.
"Press the fucking horn,"
Anthony screamed from the back. We were in the police parking lot. They were sure to hear us, but nothing. We tried and we tried. We tried screaming, kept trying the doors. Anthony was lying on the back seat trying to kick open the door as hard as he could, but the glass refused to give. Then suddenly, the smell. That rank, odorous smell. Rotten meat, fetid flesh, acrid, pungent, all-consuming came pumping out of the AC vents. I tried to turn off the AC, but the car continued to fill with the smell. There was nothing we could do. I could hear Anthony retching in the back seat. This was his first exposure to it, and he couldn't handle it. Christopher had covered up his nose and mouth with his hand, but was trying very hard to hold back vomit. All three of us kept trying the doors, but they were not moving. "Oh, fucking hell, look!" screamed Christopher, his voice muffled by his own hands. Across the road, standing, holding his suitcase with his hat and coat on, stood Chris. He was pointing to us. I could almost feel that pointed finger rubbing across my face. I had never been more scared in my entire life. The smell was overpowering. The sight was overpowering. I was praying to faint just so that I wouldn't have to deal with the situation, but my body wouldn't let me. Then the creature slowly, methodically moved his hand and pointed to another car. To our car, parked in the Tim Hortons parking lot, exactly where this one had been. In the exact spot. Impossible. Utterly impossible. What could this creature do? What was he capable of? The smell made screaming impossible, so in order to breathe as much as possible, we had to stop yelling and just look at the creature. He began crossing the road. In smooth, very human, unassuming steps, he made his way across the road. He was standing in the parking lot, holding his suitcase, and slowly advancing towards us. By now, we could all see his trademark feature. It was my husband. It was Christopher. It was the love of my life, but with the most grotesque, oversized, swollen upper lip. It looked infected and engorged. I put both my hands on my Christopher, shielding him from the creature that was approaching from the passenger side of the vehicle. He came extremely close. We were frozen in terror. No one dare moved. Anthony was pressing up against the door opposite to the creature, filled with fear reserved for children and those in war zones. And then the creature made its way to Anthony's passenger side window. Not so close as to touch the window, but close enough for Anthony to know he was the one that the creature wanted. He couldn't scream. He was paralyzed with fear, as we all were. The creature raised his hands. His perfectly human-shaped, perfectly Christopher-shaped hand, and pointed at Anthony. And then made the "no, no, no" gesture, waving one finger from side to side. He was signaling what the rim of the coffee cup had told us. Anthony shouldn't have been there. 1 + 1 = 2. He wanted Christopher and I, and nothing to do with Anthony. He looked me dead in my eyes, upper lip pulsating, and then looked at Christopher. He averted his gaze quickly, as if he couldn't stand seeing what my Christopher, what the real Christopher, looked like. And then he was gone. He turned around, suitcase still firmly in hand, and just walked away. He walked to the left of us. That's all we saw. We never saw where he went. He just vanished into the night. By the time the creature was out of sight, the awful smell had died down. The locks of the car flew open, and the three of us threw ourselves out of the vehicle. Anthony couldn't stand. The overwhelming stench was too much for him, but I propped him up and Chris held the door to the police station. We were inside in a flash, Anthony's dead weight and all. The police officer rushed towards us. "What's going on? Is he okay?" asked the police officer. He reached to his shoulder, mounted radio, and spoke into it. DI-52, DI-52. Three males, one injury. Med staff to the lobby. Anthony sprang up. The cool, clean air inside the police station drove the life back into him like a hammer to a nail.
"We're being stalked. We're being followed. We're being... Fuck."
Anthony had reached his point. He had been singled out by the creature. He had been pointed at, and it was too much for him to bear. He just started weeping uncontrollably, not knowing how to handle any of this. "Officer, we need to file a police report immediately." Chris, ever the present lawyer, took control of the situation. "Okay, I'm Officer Michael Hahn. I'll take the report, but your friend needs help." Right as he finished, a male officer wearing gloves and carrying a medical supply kit came around the corner and approached us. He could see Anthony in distress and immediately started to attend to him. "Okay, gentlemen, care to tell me what's going on?" "I'm Dr. Peter Tillman, and this is my husband, Christopher Tillman. We're being stalked and threatened, and we need to be protected. The person stalking us has assumed my identity and has been charging things to my credit card. Attempted to use, steal wasn't an appropriate word, and Christopher knew it, my vehicle, and even entered my home while my husband was there by himself." "Okay, I understand the panic, but who's your friend and what does he have to do with this?" "His name is Dr. Anthony Jovan, and he's my cousin. He's been helping us out since we realized that we weren't safe."
"And how long has that been?"
Christopher and I blankly stared at one another, not knowing how to answer this man's question. We couldn't tell him everything because he would think that we were crazy, but at the same point, we had to disclose what happened. "Since yesterday, around 8 p.m., that's when he entered my home, impersonated me, and attempted to harass my husband."
"Okay, do you know where this person is now?"
Anthony pulled off the oxygen mask they had placed over his mouth. The on-site nurse had propped him up in the chair so that he could be safe if he fainted.
"Show him the car,"
he screamed. Well, it wasn't a scream since he had no energy with which to do so. Christopher and I took Officer Hahn outside the door, waiting to show him the duplicate car that the creature had conned us into getting into. But nothing. The car was gone. I looked across the road and just as expected, I could see my car. My real car. Or I thought it was my real car, sitting in the parking lot of the Tim Hortons. Not wanting to risk it, I told the officer to come with us across the road. He radioed in to tell control board where he was going and crossed the road with us. Anthony remained in the police station after all. The creature apparently didn't want him. Officer Han, Christopher, and myself approached the vehicle, not knowing what to expect. The cop took out his flashlight and shone it inside the car.
"This your vehicle, sir?"
"Yes, it's registered in both of our names."
"Please open the doors if you don't mind."
"Not at all. Please have a look around." The police officer thoroughly searched the vehicle, even lifting the bottom part of the trunk and rifling through the glove compartment. We waived any right we had to unnecessary search and seizure and let the man do his job. Of course there was nothing, nothing at all. "Officer Hahn, please come back with me to the station and fill out paperwork. We'll see how your friend's doing. If he needs to go to the hospital, I'll ride him over. If not, there's not really much we can do, gentlemen." Christopher. "But you, I, well... How?"
Me.
"Nothing, officer?"
Christopher.
"He's right, there's not much he can do. Thank you, sir. We'll fill out the paperwork." We got into the car, including Officer Hahn, who we asked to accompany us, and we went back to the station in order to fill out the paperwork. It took less than 20 minutes, and Anthony had recovered well enough to come with us. We thanked the police and went into the parking lot. I unlocked the car and looked around to make sure nothing was off. But what the hell could I prove? What did I know anymore? Nothing. We couldn't tell what was real from what was fake anymore. We sat in the car, engine running, for about 15 minutes and discussed what we should do. The suggestions ranged from a hotel, to Anthony's, to our house, to just staying in the parking lot. Regardless of where we went, this creature would find us. At least we had filled out police reports, and Officer Han took us seriously enough to say that he would come by tomorrow and check in on us. It was about 1 a.m. by the time all this was finished. Anthony and I decided to go to my mom's place in Yorkville. It was a penthouse with more than enough room for us, and frankly, it seemed that this thing, this creature, this fake Chris, was only after myself and Christopher. So we knew we would be safe there, and it was only a few minutes away. I called my mom and she said to come on over. She's a bit of a night owl and I didn't give her any details on why we were in the area or why we wanted to come over. She just said to stop on by, so we went. On the drive, I asked Christopher for the paperwork that the cop had given us, just so I could make sure it was safe. There's now an official record of what had happened to us, and I wanted to make sure my copy was reachable, just in case. I took one glance down at the paper. I wasn't shocked, I wasn't surprised, I wasn't off-put. I was just plain terrified. Instead of a detail of the incident in the section meant for that, it only said the same three words over and over and over. New beginning to Mario. New beginning to Mario. I'm at my mom's house now. I sit and wait for tomorrow. This is starting to make more sense now. I guess all debts do need to be paid. And this concludes this episode of Storytime with Rob. Thank you guys for listening. Next time we'll finish up the story and maybe have enough time to get into a new one. If not, we will the next one. But thank you guys for listening. I love you.